This is P.S. You're Wrong, the podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate, hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Yes, Shelby's back from the dead. She was sick last week.
I know. I've turned a corner, and I hope I never get sick again. So,
yeah, you and your family are really giving Beth March energy.
Don't have a child if you don't want every disease ever known to man.
And I won't. Okay.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. Like, you have it so easy, Matt. Like, your community has nothing to complain about.
We've never been sick.
Yeah, yeah. There's no illness.
Famously healthy. Yes. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's really the plight of the
the child-rearing
family,
women.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The family unit. Oh. But, yeah, no, I feel better. And you know what? I feel like if we'd done the usual episodes last week, it would have just been me like bitching about Taylor Swift more. And I know you don't want that. So I'm glad we missed it, you know?
Wait, in what regard? I'm like, and maybe we have a little bit of time for that. If you're going to complain about her, I don't want to silence you.
Yeah,
I don't want to you know,
no,
female voices need to be empowered.
For sure. No, it was last week. I was obsessed with these like voice memos she released.
Oh, I didn't even know she released voice memos.
Oh, yeah. It was part of her original push, like, because she did like insane numbers, right? Like, she broke Adele's records for most albums sold in a week, whatever. Like, she just completely decimated any sort of competition, and she will be the number to beat, which will probably be impossible for generations to come just as the music landscape changes. And part of that was she did these like other variants where she's like, oh, I did some acoustic covers of these songs. Plus, you can get some voice memos, which she's done like the voice memo thing before. And sometimes they're free. Sometimes they're included in like a deluxe package. But this time she had like 12 voice memos scattered across 5 variants. And you couldn't like listen to them all unless you bought everyone, right? Like, or found them on TikTok or whatever. But the idea was you couldn't like collect them all in one easy thing. You had to buy 5 albums if that's what your measure was. And so I like listened to them because I liked, you know, when she did the like Making of Reputation, or you saw her working with Max Martin and Shell back then.
You bought the 5 albums?
No. I didn't buy them. I sought them out. I found the audio clips through various means. No, I did not spend a single dime. But I saw people talking about them and saying they were atrocious and they couldn't believe they were paying for these and blah, blah, blah. And usually the haters are like extreme and kind of like eye-rolly for me because it's like, why are you making your whole personality about like this thing that you don't have to invest in at all? But they were pretty bad. And it made me think a lot about why the album was bad. And anyway, so I channeled all of that angst into a Substack post instead of our usual podcast. So basically it was just like, okay, yeah, this, you could see through her, you know, self-released work behind the scenes in these voice memos, like how little she actually cared about the creativity around this project. And like, I don't know, it just kind of left a sour taste in my mouth. So I thought you'd like to hear that.
Like what specifically?
Well, it was just like, I mean, it's just hard to explain, but it was just like so soulless. Like, you know, usually in her behind the scenes, whether it's like with Aaron Dessner and Folklore in the Long Pond studio sessions, or with Reputation, where she worked with Max Martin and Shellback and she did like these 15-minute videos behind the scenes, there was so much like collaboration, like creativity and like excitement about like, oh, what about this? How does this work? Wait, let's try that sound again. Or it's like how you saw her write the bridge of Getaway Car live with Jack Antonoff. Uh-huh. And like just that energy and that creativity. And you're like, oh, that looks like what a wild experience. Whereas these were very much like bad. And, you know, she's not really giving lyrically on this album, which we all know. But even in behind this, even in these behind the scenes, it was like she just wasn't really like, there wasn't collaboration in the same sense. It was a lot of her telling Max Martin and Shellback what she wanted, which, you know, yeah, it's her project, whatever. But there's just like no energy. There's no like joy or like, oh, I had this amazing idea. I have to like get it on paper. Like, hear me out about this. It was very like pragmatic and like, I don't know. They were just like, you can seek out these, you would hate them. You can seek these out, but like they sound bad. There's no like joy in them. And so for her to then also like sell these as something like collectible and worthy of our time was also sort of like a, oh, this was just like a, there was no altruistic, like artistic motive. Like you could argue that Tortured Poets Department, she had something to say. She had a perspective. She had something to get off her chest, even if it was like a mess or, you know, all of her albums, she's been proving something. But this was like her first one where she's like top of her game and she doesn't like have anything, she doesn't have anything to share or like she doesn't seem that excited about any of it. It's just like, okay, let's deliver a package. Like, let's get something on paper. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just no like, yeah, there's no like integrity to how like the songs came about. It was just like very clinical in how they were created.
No, it does seem sort of like a cash grab across all aspects of this.
Yeah, and it worked, and it's like whatever. I'm more excited for the documentary because I think that'll be like interesting to see how she handles. Yeah, I mean, it's what we always talk about. It's like how she manages her own image and like how that accessibility and vulnerability is actually like so micromanaged and kind of like how do you feign that at that stage? I'm curious to see how it plays out.
It's going
to
be interesting because I feel like the last time she had a documentary worked really well for her.
Yeah.
And really she used it to like spin up a completely different narrative for herself that I think has paid off. Yeah. I don't know if she's going to be able to do that with this one.
Yeah.
And I think that for whatever reason, people are less, I don't know. It seems like people are less willing to kind of like go along with what she's selling right now. And I could see a situation where this is going to be a lot of footage coming out. And if it doesn't, if it seems like she's trying too hard to, you know, doctor things, or she doesn't doctor things enough and it's like, you just seem like a bad person, that could really like not go well, especially in the day and age of TikTok where, you know, like these clips of things will be going viral. It's not like, oh, it's going to get quoted in an article or whatever. It's like, no, whatever she says on these will be clipped and will be circulating. So,
yeah, I think it'll help that it's like such a, like a specific thing. Like, you know, it's this huge Eras tour. It's fascinating how it all came together. Like there's a lot to share and there was a lot of passion and that was when she was still trying to prove something, right? Like taking on the Eras tour was a huge, like, not risk in the traditional sense, but like it was a big swing, you know, to do all your music and kind of extend the concert experience. And obviously by the time she started filming this documentary, it had already been proven like a success. But I feel like even that was Taylor when she was still like clawing her way up that mountain. But now she's like reached everything she wanted, you know, like she's just like unstoppable. And it's like, well, is show life of a showgirl like really, is that what we're going to get now that there isn't something like to prove motivating her, you know? Is that like her?
Did you work so hard for this end? Like, is like, is what you've been working for all along life of a showgirl? Like,
yeah. So we'll see. Anyways, that was a lot of discourse. Obviously happy to add to it, but yeah.
Well, I feel like Taylor Swift has sort of been topped this week.
Yeah.
Because another artist has popped up with an album that's all about petty grievances related to her ex. And has been just a delicious little bit of pop culture gossip. Because
yeah, that's what Taylor needs is a divorce. So maybe she'll go the way of Adele. We'll give her a few years to have the rise and fall of her love story. And then she'll come back with something creative to prove. And she'll look to Lily Allen as her inspo.
As her muse. I will say this just on the Taylor Swift front. I have a friend who is very, I guess, more of an acquaintance. And he is very on Twitter and is seemingly always kind of getting into low-key Twitter beefs with people. But okay. Somebody had posted that photo that's Joe Alwyn and Taylor Swift where they're like in the mirror and she's got the weird wig on. You know, the photo that I'm talking about, like where they're in the bathroom mirror. Someone had posted this photo and sort of said like, yeah, like this was Taylor Swift's muse is like Joe Alwyn. And, and my friend had reposted that and said like, yeah, like we're not getting any of these good songs out of Travis Kelce. And he has gotten like multiple death threats from Swifties. And then Swifties try to call his work and come up with like fake stories as to why he should get fired from his job. And of course his office is like, yeah, some like 12-year-old called here and was like claiming you had done weird things. It's like, no, that's just one of these Taylor Swift beef people. But it is crazy. Wild. Like parents, watch your
fandoms
children.
In general. It's like, guys, you need to chill. Like, I don't know what can heal us as humanity now. Like the stand-up is so, I never want to be involved. It's terrifying.
Well, then there was a study that came out that I saw in the New York Times talking about how like the literacy rates are going down and how like now lots of people like can sort of only like half read. And I'm like, oh gosh, well, that's not going to help us. Yeah. Anyways, back to Lily Allen.
Lily Allen had something.
Lily Allen, who I know Lily Allen from like The Fear. I feel like she has not been famous in any real capacity since like 2008. Yes. But like what year was that song?
No, she hasn't done an album in like a decade.
Yeah. And she married David Harbour. Who is Chief Sheriff Hopper. I was like, Hawkins. No, that's the city. Hopper in Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And he sort of seems like a weird guy. She's kind of a weird person. She was like a British kind of tabloid star back in the 2000s as well. But again, like she's one of those celebrities who's like more of a British celebrity than an international celebrity. Like I bet if you talk to British people, they know a lot about the details of her life. But I think in America that hasn't really translated. So she married David Harbour. They had like a Las Vegas wedding where an Elvis married them. This was in 2020
or something.
2020. Yeah. Not that long ago. And then it came out earlier this year, or no, last year at some point, that they were getting a divorce, that they were separated, that they were getting a divorce. I don't know that anybody was really anticipating this album, West End Girl, that came out this past weekend. But it is basically entirely a takedown of David Harbour and their relationship together. Like it's in chronological order, like follows their relationship. And according to the album, which, you know, like who, like some of it might be fictional, whatever. The story of the album is basically that she like marries this guy. They move into a townhouse together in Brooklyn, which Lily Allen and David Harbour did. Then Lily Allen gets a play in London, which she got, and goes over there. And David Harbour's like, okay, well, while you're gone, like, let's sort of open the relationship. We should be, you know, like, I have needs or whatever. And then this turns into where he is doing way more than that and cheating on her with lots of different people, that she calls him a sex addict. Yeah. She's kind of trying to go along with it and trying to be non-monogamous, but it's not working and he's not giving what she wants and he's like emotionally abusive a bit and just, yeah, the just like crash and burn of their relationship.
Yeah.
But it's very obviously all about David Harbour. It's one sort of storyline. It's not even like a Taylor Swift album where you're like, oh, well, this song is about this person and this song is. It's like, it's all about one relationship. It's clearly about him.
Babes. Yeah.
and it's just like ripping him to shreds. And I think this, I mean, this in general is a level of petty that I think is funny, but it's especially crazy to drop this album now, right as the Stranger Things final season press cycle is about to begin. Like, she must hate him so much because every single, like, he's not going to be able to do like red carpets and things for this. Like, he's just going to be like incapacitated. Half the cast at this point now can't do press for this show because they've been canceled. Like, it's just, it's such a dumpster fire.
Yeah.
And I'm so thrilled to see where this goes because you know that both of these people are crazy and petty and will be doing other things. Because then I looked back, because if you listen through the album, which I did, she seems very sort of level-headed and he seems like the crazy person. And then I went on to her Wikipedia page because I was trying to like look up, you know, what the relationship timeline and whatnot. And she is also seems like a deranged person. she's cheated on people in the past. She's been the other woman in relationships where she knew the other person was married. She dressed up one of her ex-boyfriend's penises in blackface. Like, just like wild things. Like, they both just both seem like unhinged characters. So I can only imagine where this is going to go from here. And I'm excited to watch it.
Well, I mean, fortunately for her, David Harbour doesn't really have the same creative outlet to be unhinged. And you can't just talk dirt in the press. You only get this sort of creative license if you're releasing music.
If you don't
music,
think we're not getting a drunken Facebook Live or something at some point. Like,
no, he's too big of a team. He's a Marvel actor now. He's Florence Pugh's dad. He has a Marvel contract to protect. He's one of the new Avengers.
As we've seen, Marvel can chop people very quickly. And I think he was just in a movie. I don't think he's needed for any of the rest of these.
No, yeah. I mean, it was pretty salacious. And I love a story. I love a celebrity breakup. They're so messy. And they're just like not, you know, it's like, it's real problems, but there's such a distance to the reality of, you know, life altering issues. Like, they're both fine, you know, like the emotional turmoil is one thing, but it's also like, yeah, she's benefiting from this story now too. Like, you know, it's just so hard to separate fact from fiction with this sort of smear campaign. But no, yeah, it is fascinating to see, like, well, one, the idea of having this open marriage and then seeing how messy that got so fast and like the betrayals happening within that. And like, she's like outlining specifically the parameters of like, oh, we agreed we can have sex, but we have to pay for it. And like things like this, where it's like, oh, okay, taking notes, like this is exactly how it happened. And then here's this turn of events. And now we're dealing with this. And why does this betrayal hurt so much? So yeah, I mean, it sucks for David Harbour, but I don't feel too bad for him. And also just proves, again, the Architectural Digest, like, curse, because they did a house tour. And I remember it because they did it in, like, 2023. And they love a floral print. Like, I remember they had so many floral wallpapers in their house. And every time a couple does one of those, they end up getting divorced and selling the apartment. And sure enough, that apartment has now listed since the album was released. Wow. So honestly, good marketing for them on that house now too, because you have Architectural Digest reposting the breakup with a link to the to the listing. Well,
also, they David Harbour also did, so there's also a song on the album called Pussy Palace, which is about David Harbour's like apartment in New York and how she went there and found like bags of condoms and dildos and all kinds of things.
Yeah.
And David Harbour separately did a piece, did an interview like with that. So you can look at pictures of that apartment. But then while I was looking that up, I found a story about how some woman jumped from the balcony and killed herself lived there. So I'm like, this whole thing is just cursed, cursed, cursed.
Yeah, yeah, it's very messy. But you know, the Stranger Things thing is like...
Maybe that's its own curse.
It is cursed, I know. And I've also been like being fed a few different, you know, they're trying to promote this. Everyone's kind of like, this is insane that this has taken so long. The Duffer Brothers are trying to play it off as like, no, we think having years between seasons is actually a great thing for this show about teens. And now they're like, the cast is doing their promo stuff. And it's so awkward because a lot of it is they're rewatching scenes from earlier seasons and like talking about the process. But what's fascinating is it's like, most of the cast, it's one-on-one. Like Will is watching the scenes one-on-one, or you get like a group of the teenagers, like with the four like older kids, and they're
now all like all 30.
Yeah. And then some of the kids are together, like Sadie Sink and the other three, but Will's separate, and then Millie's obviously on her own. And it's all just like, do these people all have like writers in their contracts about like, I will not spend time with this person, I hate this person's gut, don't put me next to this person. And it's just like, I think they must be so much messy, like bad blood on that set, and also just like, ugh, working with the worst people vibes, because everyone seems just kind of irritated at this point. And we're still like a month away from actually seeing the first batch of episodes. Poor Stranger Things.
Well, because I'm like, okay, the Will Schnapp has all of the like Zionism things.
Yeah.
So I feel like people probably don't necessarily want to be associated with him. And then Millie Bobby Brown has like 9 million different weird things. And I think that if you're Finn Wolfhard, who I think is probably like the most unscathed person and the person who's had the best career coming out of Stranger Things, you're kind of like, yeah, I'm actually fine without this. Like, I don't need to be really doing any press for this.
Has he had a good career? Or you just mean his association, his brand with the show is fine?
I mean, I just like, I feel like he has been in a lot of things. That are not, I'm like, let me, like, he was in the Ghostbusters movie. He was in that like Legends of Ochi thing. Right. He had a horror film that he directed that came out. Like, I think that he's just, I don't know, like done a lot of things. Yeah. Oh, he was in the Saturday Night Live movie.
Okay.
Yeah. And I feel like he's the one who's like probably the most famous of the boys of the show. And then you have the other two boys who are like really have not done anything, I feel like, other than Stranger Things that I'm aware of.
Gatton has done a couple like random teen shows and Broadway.
And he'll be on Dancing with the Stars, you know, like that. He has that career headed for him. But yeah, it is weird. And then I think if you're Maya Hawke or like Joe Keery or them, you're kind of like, okay, well, like these were like tweens that I had to hang out with. The parents are a completely different set, and then now you're gonna have Hopper, who's like nobody's gonna want to do press with. So it's really it's a minefield. And the fact that they basically have to do three rounds of press for this because there's three different drops for these shows.
Unhinged.
It's great. It's excellent.
Wait, did you know, I might have just missed this, but did you know Katy Perry is dating Justin Trudeau?
Yes, I did. This has been ongoing for like a month
now. It's been rumored.
Probably.
Okay, it's been It's been assumed.
They were spotted together like on a beach or something at some point. And everyone was like, huh. And then he was at one of her shows, like on tour, which like, okay, why is the, he's not still the prime minister
of Canada. He's former.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, why is the former prime minister of Canada like at Katy Perry's show when and it's not like he's at Taylor Swift's show or like Beyonce's show. Like nobody's at Katy Perry's show. Katy Perry's barely at her show sometimes when she's, you know, as the various mechanical contraptions break as she so goes on.
But they were seen officially they walked together this
week. They were well somebody asked they were like they walked out of a hotel or something with like their holding hands and one of them was like we're officially dating or whatever.
So random.
So like Katy, that relationship is confusing. Is so Katy Perry's span of relationships is wild because it is such different people. It's like Russell Brand, I think marrying the like sort of OG version of Katy Perry makes a lot of sense because her thing was like, I'm kind of kooky crazy. Yeah. And his thing was like, I'm a British comedian who's like kind of raunchy. So you could see how they were paired together. Then her and Orlando Bloom is interesting because I think when they got together, it was a little bit like, okay, like he's kind of washed up. She's maybe a little bit past her prime, but like, you know, but they're both like hot people and they were both, and they were slash are both like A-list celebrities. So it kind of makes sense. But now it's like Justin Trudeau is a, like a educated prime minister who presumably knows lots of people who are like very, you know, well-educated politicians, businessmen, like that kind of thing. And then he's dating this woman whose most recent notable accomplishment was like this bizarre space flight that everybody hated. Like, and then an album that everybody thought was bad. Like, it's just so weird. Like, how did they even meet?
I know. That's what's fascinating. I mean, that just proves like politicians just want to be celebrities. Like, they're not smarter than us. They're just smarmier. You know, that's my general take going forward.
No.
So I bet they get along just fine.
Okay. Do you have any other stories?
No, that's it. Those were the two that struck my fancy.
Okay. Well, for Love It or Hate It, I feel like we have to do due diligence and talk about your namesake film, Shelby Oaks, which I saw this week. It came out this weekend.
Yeah, okay. Okay. This was written by someone who's associated with someone else, right?
He's like a YouTuber or something. Okay. I'm like, let me pull up who this is. Because I did not realize this until after the fact. It's written by Chris Schuckman, who is an American YouTuber. But I guess he sort of like does...
Is he friends with someone or he knew
he's
someone?
Like a Rotten Tomatoes like review YouTuber, I guess. Okay. So he's like a movie YouTuber. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't...
He was like... Because I read about the... Because it's been everywhere. And I'm like, why is this like indie film getting so much promo?
Oh, well, Mike Flanagan is an executive producer. So that might be it.
Okay, maybe that's it.
Because he's done all of the Stephen King things.
Yeah. Okay.
And then Neon acquired it.
Cute. Okay. And you loved it.
No, I hated it. It's so bad. It's like, it's such a terrible movie.
This is a controversial take, right? Isn't it doing pretty well? Or most people like, that was fine?
I mean, I don't know if it's been doing well. I'm like, let me look at the... It has a 58% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
It starts out...
It made its money back, so that's good for it. But
the premise sort of... Like, the first, like, 10 minutes of it, I thought we really were onto something. Because the premise is that there was a, like, YouTube channel about these four friends who were would go to haunted sites and sort of do paranormal investigations. Sure. And they went to this place called Shelby Oaks. That's cute. Like a kind of abandoned haunted town named after you, an abandoned haunted person. Yes, shell of a human, constantly sick. Sort of crawling on the floor with your hair all over the place. So they go to this like town that's this abandoned town, and they're in this hotel, or they're in this sort of house, and three of them wind up dead. One of them disappears, and all they have left is like the video camera footage. This is set in like 2008 or something like that.
Cute.
But the opening like 10-12 minutes are as if a crew is filming a like true crime documentary about this case going missing. So it's like they're interviewing the cast members like they're sitting for documentaries. And I thought, oh, this will be kind of interesting if this is like a documentary, or if this is a horror film, but it's shot like a documentary. Like we've seen that before, but like, you know, I thought it was an interesting premise. Yeah. But then like about 10-15 minutes in, we stop with the documentary thing and it just becomes like a regular movie. Like and so then the documentary conceit doesn't come back. It's just about the sister who's like looking for her missing sister who, you know, like maybe dead, maybe not be dead, whatever. And the writing and the act, like every piece of this is so bad. It's like soap opera quality acting. The lighting in every scene is weird. The acting is bad. The writing is horrific. Like, and it just hits every horror trope possible. It's like, oh, you know, the abandoned city Shelby Oaks. Guess what it also has? An abandoned amusement park. Guess what it also has? An abandoned prison where this man was. And then, of course, the sister is like, oh, you know when I need to go and visit this abandoned prison in an abandoned town? 3 a.m. It's like, what? Why? Like, why don't you just go during the day? There's no reason why you need to go in the middle of the night. It's not like you're trying to sneak past somebody or something. And then it gets to this, the most ludicrous end of a movie I have ever seen. Like, just, like, laughable. Can I spoil it? Am I allowed to spoil this?
I read the spoilers when I saw your original review.
Okay, so she goes to this, like, haunted cabin in the woods because, you know, why not? There's an old creepy woman there. It's kind of a Hereditary style situation where, oh, the old woman is doing weird rituals in order to, you know, satiate like this horned demon lord who's lurking around, whatever.
Yeah.
They find that the sister's there, of course. And so the non-hostage sister like unlocks the hostage sister, like, we gotta get out of here, blah 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 blah. Right. Then the hostage sister falls out the window and gets eaten alive by dogs in the most unconvincing bit of visual effects I've ever seen. Like, I had to stop from laughing. It looked so bad. And that's like the final thing that happens in the movie. It's so laughably terrible. And I was like, everybody involved with this, like, I can't imagine watching this movie and going, oh yeah, let's spend a lot of money promoting this. Like, it was so bad that I was almost kind of like, was that the plan, that they were trying to like convince people to watch it with a so bad it's good kind of thing, but then they weren't going to say that to anybody?
Right. Yeah.
Like, it was very... It was, I didn't really know what was happening, but it was terrible.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Was it fun, though, sometimes?
Not really.
No.
And I thought, Shelby deserves better than this movie.
Thank you. I appreciate hearing that, at least. Thank you so much. Yeah, that's too bad. I saw Roofman. Which everyone liked, and I like, you know, I could appreciate it. It was fun. It was too long. It should have been trimmed by like 30 minutes, but
yes.
And in, I was just like, man, we just infantilize these like handsome white like criminals. I don't know what it is about our culture that we have to be Like, I'm sorry. I just don't walk away thinking like, oh man, that guy, he deserves
but
something.
But he was nice. But he was nice when he was robbing the McDonald's. Nice. He gave his coat to that woman.
Him. He was so nice. So fascinating how nice he was. I just like, we spent 2 hours. He was kind of like a
Robin Hood figure, you know?
No, he was not.
He was robbing McDonald's.
Self-Robin Hood.
A giant corporation to give money to himself.
Yeah. I was just kind of like, I think also the thing that annoyed me most is that the credits roll and it shows all these like real interviews about the real criminal and like about the real people who he interacted with. And it's like, this is so dumb that it's like, if we'd at least pretended that this was just a fictionalized account of like the perfect kind of criminal, like blah, blah, blah. But to like really reiterate, like, no, this is a real guy and he's set for parole in 20 years. Aren't we excited? It was just like, I was like, is this really worthy of a 2-hour film with this theatrical release full of these big stars? I don't know. I was just kind of like annoyed by it by the end. I mean, yeah, I don't know how to say it except that I was just irked.
I mean, morally, yes, I do think this film is a little bit dubious. I don't love he's a criminal, but he's sort of a nice criminal, so we should feel like bad for him or should be on his side, because that does feel a bit like, I don't know. However, yeah. I will say the story is ludicrous. And when I was watching the movie, I kept thinking, oh, well, they definitely made this up for the movie. Uh-huh. And then when you get to the end and they show all of the footage and you're like, wait, these weird sort of like side plots in this movie that I assumed were fake are all real. Like this all actually happened.
Like what?
Like the fact that he burnt down the dentist office.
Yeah, because he was trying to. The weirdest thing he could do, honestly.
But I'm why like, that's his own file? That he lived in the, that he was dating somebody while he was living like on the lam inside a fake wall in a Toys R Us, that he broke out of jail, like that he was robbing all of these McDonald's through the roof. Like, it's just, the whole story is crazy. I didn't think it was a great movie, and I do think it was long, and I do agree with you about the sort of like moral quandaries of it, but I also can very easily see why they turned this into a movie, because it is a wacky story. And also, it really fulfills, I think, an urge in all of us, which is like, what if I lived in a department store? You know, I think we've all, like, I know I have had that thought hundreds of times in my life. And to be able to watch somebody do it, you do kind of realize like, oh, there are certain things about this that would be kind of cool, but then also things that you're like, oh, this would be hell.
Yeah. No, honestly, the number one question was like, this manager of this Toys R Us is bad at his job, because like, how has he not a single time rolled the tapes to see why all this merchandise is missing and then realized there were no tapes and then put together like, what's happening here? You know,
it's the 90s or the early 2000s or whatever year was
of DVDs missing. It's like, that's a lot of stock, sir. Toys R Us management must have some questions, but yeah, what do I know? But anyways, yeah, it was like, yeah, I'd heard it was like so fun, and it was, but then I was like, this is weird. This is weird. This could have been played.
Did you see it while you were sick? Were you in a grumpy mood when you saw this?
I mean, no, I wasn't. I like Channing Tatum. I love Kirsten Dunst. I was like on board. It was like fun and funny and interesting, but then it just went on too long, and it's like the worse he became, the more I was like, this is so weird. This is like a weird person to be, I don't know, kind of like sympathizing with. Okay. Anyways, it's fine. It was a fine movie. It.
I mean, it's not my favorite, so, you know.
Yeah.
And nobody saw Regretting You, unfortunately. So we can't give you a report on the Colleen Hoover movie. Yeah. I tried to get Shelby to do an episode about that. But Shelby said, no, we can't be supporting Coho in the year of our Lord 2025. Even though I've heard that movie is deranged.
I heard it debuted at like 13% on Rotten Tomatoes. Which
And I think it made no money. Yeah. So.
Yeah. You know what it is Dave Franco has no like sex appeal. I don't get it. I don't know what it is about him exactly, but I mean, it's probably that he's not a good actor, but I don't want to say that because I don't feel like I've seen enough of his stuff. But he does not exude any sort of chemistry with anyone I've ever seen, except maybe in his interviews with his wife. But
I liked, what was the horror film? Together with him and...
Yeah, with his wife, his actual wife.
Yeah, I thought he was good
at that. But he also didn't have to be likable in that. Whereas he's a leading
man.
Does
he have to... He's the leading man of this? I thought this was about...
It's a duel. There's a teen couple and then her mom is... Because what happens is that their spouses, the adult spouses, die in a car crash together.
Because they're cheating.
Yeah, exactly. And then these widows realize that they actually love each other. And so they begin to hook up. But then the daughter is like, why is my mom being so weird? I just lost my dad. And she doesn't know that they're hooking up. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Is my understanding of it.
It's got that's my understanding based on the trailer as well. But I was unsure how big of a part he actually had. I thought it was more going to be about the young people.
It's like both, I think. So
it's got a 30% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, look at it. People are coming to bat for it. Yeah. Anyways, the movie I saw no one talking about is the one we get to talk about on Thursday. Yay!
A House of Dynamite. This wasn't one of Netflix's top 10 or whatever.
I'm sure it was. I didn't know it existed until you reminded me. And then I saw it. And so
there's a lot of famous people in it. So
it's a very big film. Mm-hmm.
It's a star-studded cast, if you will. Yes. Okay. Well, yes, we'll be back to talk about A House of Dynamite on Thursday instead of regretting you.
Yeah.
Yes. And thank you for listening. We'll be back then. Bye.